It's time again for the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour here on Kill Radio. And this is Rowan Kirk from the Roots of Acid Jazz album. Just so you know. Today we got to deal with all these things that have been happening just this recently. Terry Schiavo, but I don't know. I've got Bob Avakian, got some Bob Avakian stuff here, some Terry Morello, and the regular things and some music and all that. It's time again. It's time for the Thursday Impressionistic News. So settle in, press your ears right up against the speakers, and let's see what happens. Indianapolis Star, Indianapolis, Indiana, website, and from the newspaper there from March 1, 2005, thanks to Jake Sexton and LyingMediaBastards.com. Noblesville, Indiana, investigators say he picked out teens and young women with backgrounds that made them vulnerable to authority. As a military recruiter, he had access to personal information, making the quest easier. Indiana National Guard Sergeant Eric P. Vettisi, 36, was jailed Monday, accused of sexually assaulting six female recruits, most of them Noblesville High School students he met during his 18 months as a full-time recruiter. Hamilton County investigators said Monday he is accused of raping at least one recruit. Nationwide, military recruiters reportedly have been linked to at least a half a dozen sexual assaults during the past few years since the creation of the federal No Child Left Behind Act. This broad education law requires, among other things, that high schools give military recruiters greater access to students. The 31-count indictment filed in Hamilton Superior Court implicates Vettisi in a pattern of sexual misconduct during a period from May 2002 to November 2003. Authorities said incidents occurred after his assignment as a recruiter in August 2001. The six women identified in the indictment as his victims ranged in age from 17 to 21 at the time of the assaults. These were very young women who were being recruited out of high school classes. Most of the activities took place either before they signed up as an actual recruit for the National Guard or just after that recruitment. And investigators suspect there may have been more victims. Now, in a sidebar here, there is a list of other grand jury indictments happening across the country. In July 2003, a former U.S. Army recruiter based in Moreno Valley, California, sentenced to 16 months in prison for the statutory rape of a 17-year-old. A former Army recruiter in the Baltimore area was convicted in January 2004, of fondling a teenage recruit who was And in May 2004, a 34-year-old Marine recruiter in Blooming Grove, New York, was charged with six counts of rape of a 16-year-old girl. In June 2004, a military jury sentenced a Marine Corps recruiter to 5 years in prison for raping a 17-year-old high school student in a Riverside. November 2004, an Army recruiter in Riverside, California, was arrested on suspicion of having sex with two 17-year-old Paloma Valley High School students. So the No Child Left Behind Act means that the military has first crack at those high school kids, and this is being abused. The awfulness behind this is just obvious. So I needn't say any more, right? Right. This is the weekly news and review from Harper's.org website and from the KillRadio.org people. I'm Bennett, your faithless host. This was posted Tuesday, March 22nd, 2005, by Paul Ford. And this concerns the information of the last several days, at least before Tuesday. Astonishingly, the cruel, inhuman idiots in the U.S. Senate subpoenaed Terri Schiavo, a woman who has been in a persistent vegetative state since 1991, to cruelly testify before the Health, Education, and Labor Committee. The subpoena was intended to make it impossible for Schiavo to be taken off the feeding tube that allows her to survive. The order, however, was defied by a Florida judge, and the feeding tube was removed. Schiavo then began to die of dehydration, though, of course, she feels nothing. She feels no thirst, no hunger. So that's the only good thing here, is that she doesn't physically suffer. The House and Senate held emergency sessions in order to pass a bill that would transfer the case from state court to federal court. The bill was then signed by ace scumbag President George W. Bush, who had flown from his ranch in Crawford, Texas for the occasion. He sits in a classroom for 20 minutes after being heard that we're being attacked. But he flies across country in order to save one woman who's already dead. Schiavo's husband, who wants to let her die, wondered why Congress was expending so much energy on the case. Why doesn't Congress worry about people not having health insurance, he asked, or the budget? Let's talk about the children who don't have homes. Schiavo described House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who was leading the fight to reinsert Terri Schiavo's feeding tube, as a little slithering snake. And I could say much worse things about that scumbag. Global warming was melting the glaciers in the Himalayas, and a snow festival in Arctic Greenland was canceled. In Greenland was canceled due to a heat wave. And yet, of course, the Bush administration says that there's no such thing as global warming. The Senate passed a resolution that would permit drilling for oil in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and Americans celebrated the second birthday of the war in Iraq. As soldiers in Apache helicopters and Humvees kept watch, the National Assembly of Iraq held its first meeting. 275 members met at a convention center on the Tigris River while explosions rattled the convention center's windows. North of Baghdad, a suicide car bomber killed three members of the Iraqi National Guard and wounded 11. Now there's a job for George Bush, to be in the Iraqi National Guard. Iraqi barbers were being killed because they gave Western-style haircuts and cut off beards. And Italy announced that it would start withdrawing its troops from Iraq in September. And Berlusconi's a fascist. George W. Bush recommended Paul Wolfowitz to head the World Bank. describing him as a compassionate, decent man. Oh, yes, Bush knows that. And a television exploded in Egypt, killing 4 children. I bet they were broadcasting something about my pet goat. The Department of Homeland Insecurity was preparing for the detonation of a 10-kiloton nuclear device, a biological attack with aerosolized anthrax, an outbreak of pneumonic plague, a flu pandemic starting in South China, the spraying of a chemical blister agent over a football stadium, an attack on an oil refinery, the explosion of a tank of chlorine, a 7.2 magnitude earthquake, a major hurricane in a metropolitan area, 3 cesium-137 dirty bombs going off in 3 different cities, each contaminating 36 city blocks, the detonation of improvised bombs in sports stadiums and emergency rooms, liquid anthrax in ground beef, a foot-and-mouth disease outbreak, and a cyber attack on the nation's financial infrastructure. Wow. Edeka, a German supermarket chain, announced that shoppers would soon be able to pay using their fingerprints, thumbprints probably, and Bernard Ebbers, the former chief executive of WorldCom, was convicted of securities fraud, conspiracy, and 7 counts of filing false reports. Martha Stewart was finding her ankle bracelet to be both uncomfortable and irritating. Kofi Annan proposed to expand the UN Security Council to 24 members, and China took steps to stop an invasion of red ants. A North Carolina dentist was in trouble for filling syringes with his semen and squirting it into the mouths of several female patients. Bobby Short died, as did John DeLorean, and Scott Peterson, who was sentenced to death. In Malawi, 2 journalists were arrested for reporting that President Bingu wa Mutharika was scared of ghosts. And the Washington State Legislature was trying to decide whether to classify goat napping as a misdemeanor or a felony. Angry at a corrupt election, Kyrgyzstani protesters took over municipal buildings in the city of Ashbagash, and Ukraine revealed that between 1999 and 2001, local arms dealers had smuggled 18 nuclear-capable KH-55 cruise missiles to Iran and China. A group of researchers at Stanford University were preparing to use stem cells from aborted fetuses to create a mouse that has human brain cells. And a British cannibal was imprisoned for life. The Pentagon admitted that many of the prisoners who have died in American custody in Iraq and Afghanistan since 2002 were victims of criminal homicide. The Pope, too ill to perform Palm Sunday Mass, waved an olive branch from his apartment window. Police in York, Pennsylvania, arrested a 53-year-old serial sheep molester in a barn. The man said he was just petting the sheep, even though it was 3 a.m. It was not his barn, and he had baler's twine in his back pocket, which can be used to bind sheep. People were selling their bodies to advertisers as display space. Southeast of Baghdad, U.S. troops killed 26 Iraqi militants. And police in Florida arrested a 5-year-old girl at her kindergarten, binding her hands with plastic ties and placing handcuffs around her ankles. The girl, who weighs 40 pounds, was upset about some jelly beans. Alan Greenspan related that when he needs inspiration prior to giving a speech, he turns on a large fan, strips naked, and takes a nice hot bath. A magnitude 7.0 earthquake hit Japan. Tornadoes struck Bangladesh. And floods in Afghanistan killed more than 200 people. Pollution has killed all but 13 river dolphins in China's Yangtze River. The United Nations estimated that 180,000 people have died in Darfur since October 2003. And municipal workers in Buffalo, New York were asked to provide their own toilet paper at work due to a budget crisis. A Wisconsin woman who decided that God does not exist rammed her car into a Catholic church. The church was unharmed, but her car was destroyed. Evangelical Christians from the United States and ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel were working together to stop homosexuals from marching through Jerusalem. A woman in Zimbabwe testified that she had paid an advisor $5,000 to fly four invisible mermaids named Emma, Charmaine, Charbine, and Bela from London to Zimbabwe. Satan's face appeared on a turtle shell in Indiana, and a judge in Pennsylvania refused to let two first cousins marry. United States gas prices reached a record high, and a woman in India committed suicide so that her two blind sons could each receive one of her eyes. Doctors said that there was little chance that such a transplant would work. Yep, there we go. I don't know, you know, sometimes at the end of these things I can laugh and say, oh, isn't that funny? But I don't know. Anyway, that's the weekly news. And from her new album, here's Sweet the Sting by Tori Amos.
I am in a chain.
Tori proves that sometimes it's okay to be on a major label. That's from The Beekeeper, her new album, Sweet the Sting. And, man, I love that. I think this is a great album. Now, I was hoping that I would have an interview with Joe Veal, who is the official representative spokesperson for the Revolutionary Communist Party. And perhaps Joe will come in next week. I kind of doubt he's listening, but maybe he is. You know, the I hung out with some RCP people back in the early 80s, actually 1980, in Chicago, and found them to be all very idealistic people. And they were concerned right then of that that there be actual revolution fomenting in the world because it was needed. But they would seem to argue all the time about what the revolution might look like. And myself, as an artist, intellectual, well, I just asked too many questions, you know, which is what happens, you know. But in lieu of Joe being here, I decided to play a little bit of Bob Avakian's Revolution DVD. And so I'm going to let him kind of speak. This is sort of a skim through disc three, where he tries to set in motion how you go about this, because that's always my question. How do you do it? So let's let him speak for a few minutes. I may interrupt with some carefully unthought-out improvised ideas. This is Bob Avakian speaking in San Francisco, I think.
Let's start with the big question. How could we actually make revolution in a country like the U.S.? In order to get into this, it's important to discuss what the path to revolution, the path to being able to seize power is in different countries, in different parts of the world, in order that we can understand how it could come about here. I talked about the lopsidedness in the world. There are basically, this refers to a great divide in the world between two different types of countries, among other things. The great majority of countries in the world, what is generally referred to as the third world, are made up of countries where the people in their great majority are in very desperate and deeply impoverished conditions, where the conditions in the country have been maintained through the workings of the imperialist system in a backward state, especially in the countryside, where people, particularly in the countryside, are barely able to eke out a living and often even have to leave the countryside.
See, there you go. He can't have artists and intellectuals when he's aiming at poor people living in the countryside, which means that there really isn't room for artists and intellectuals, eh?
Where the means of communication and transportation do not extend evenly and uniformly throughout the country, and where the reach of the central authority, the ruling government or state, does not extend powerfully throughout all parts of the country, but is centered in the urban areas where the seats of government and the seats of power are.
And where most of the RCP people are. They primarily are students and people in their early 20s. There are some people who are older, and the older ones tend to be very interesting people, the people who've stuck with it over the years. But when you're around the groups, it tends to be young, idealistic people who want to see revolutionary change. Now, let me state here that they actually do think, the RCP, I've got a couple of their recent revolutionary worker papers, and And they actually do feel that that the Bush administration is going to set martial law. Bush is going to stay president. He's going to become king, I guess. He's going to stay president after the 4 years. That everything in the system is going to change unless we have direct revolution.
In many of these countries, for example, in places like Nepal or in Peru, in the remote parts of the countryside, and especially this is true if the areas are mountainous, it's very difficult for the government to move large numbers of forces, troops, and equipment, and so on, and concentrate it quickly in an area that's remote from the capital and the major cities of concentrated population. Now, some of this has changed with the development of things and means of communication, satellites and so on, helicopters and other things in recent years. But still, this basic condition continues to exist in these countries. For example, in a place like Nepal, you might have in some of the remote areas, the most you might have is a police outpost in some area with a few police in it, not a large army garrison. You have army garrisons, but they're generally closer to the cities. So this provides the opportunity as well as the necessity in making a revolution in these kinds of countries to begin more or less from the start, taking up guerrilla warfare as the main form of revolutionary struggle. But first, another key question in making revolution, which I've touched on a couple of times and just referred to, is how to unite all the forces that must be and can be united, both in order to have a powerful enough force to actually defeat and overthrow the present oppressive system, and then to be able to carry out the radical transformation of society as a whole.
The radical transformation of society as a whole. The violent revolution, in other words, another revolutionary war.
These are not challenges that can be met with just a few people, a few thousand or even tens or hundreds of thousands. The orientation must be to finally win millions, even tens of millions, to directly take part in or to actively support revolution, and to isolate to the greatest extent possible the ruling class of this system and its diehard supporters. And here's some recent experience, which did involve literally millions of people, can help get a clearer picture of the importance of uniting all who can be united and the strategic importance of building the united front under the leadership of the proletariat and its vanguard. Let's look at the mass outpouring of protest and resistance against the war in Iraq once again. There was great significance to this, obviously. Not only did people come forth and protest and demonstrate and rebel, but they opened their minds up to all kinds of new ideas and began to see things in a whole different way and began to see the system and how it operates and who rules it, at least getting glimmers of that. At the same time, there was a great significance to the outbreaks and outpourings among the youth in this overall situation, especially proletarian youth. The student walkouts, for example, that took place in many cities, including Oakland, Los Angeles, and New York. I have to say, coming from the San Francisco Bay Area, I was thrilled when I saw this whole article in our paper about Castlemont High School. That's a high school in East Oakland that I'm very familiar with, and it's like I always thought of it as growing up in terms of track and basketball. And I was thrilled to see that hundreds of youth broke out of there and were talking in terms of not only resisting this war, but beginning to talk about the proletariat and proletarian revolution, at least the more politically advanced among them.
A million people protested against the Chinese government in Tiananmen Square. A million people. And enough soldiers were routed to stop them.
At the same time, as I have emphasized a number of times in this talk, because this is a point of fundamental importance, the leadership of the proletariat in the revolutionary process overall is made possible and is realized most of all and can only be realized in the final analysis through its vanguard party and its leadership.